I'm going to safely assume that the Rabbi Shapiro that's getting an award and a presentation and an einikol coming up is a different Rabbi Shapiro. Because Rishus de Rosh Hashiva Shlita, I didn't follow that. We segued from one Rabbi Shapiro to another. So I heard my einikol is here presenting me with an award, and I got very excited. But I thought the Rishiva meant the other one. So I realized tonight I'm the other one. I'm very honored to be here on behalf of the Calabasas Yeshiva. It's a tremendous, tremendous chus for me. I feel very badly. I see that on both sides there are kama v'kama people standing. For those who have been in my shul the last 30 years in North Miami Beach, they know that I genuinely feel badly when people have to stand. So that's indicative of how many people there are, but to the men and women that I have to stand, I sincerely, sincerely apologize. Bereshus the Rosh Hashiva Shlita. I also want to thank Rabbi and Mrs. Saltz, as the Rosh Hashiva did. They both spoke to me countless times. Their attention to detail, extraordinary. I remember when I was given by Rabbi Saltz the topic, I commented to him, I've been at Baruch Hashem in many places around the world. It was one of the clearest, most defined, thought-out topics I've ever been given. Apparently, when I tell that to people, they say, yeah, that's Rabbi Saltz, very taka thought out. So I'm happy that I was given such a topic. Birshus, all those who are here, and I'm looking around and seeing so many of the Rabbanim here in Los Angeles, and I really feel very inadequate speaking in the presence of the Rabbanim. I'm grateful that I've been given that opportunity, and it's a tremendous, tremendous chus to be in everyone's presence. The specific topic was Mesiras HaTorah in our times. Two things about that impressed me with the topic. And then Rabbi Saltz said that the byline was successfully transmitting the Mesirah of yesteryear to the children of today. If you know anything about topics, that says so much. We have 30 minutes to speak together, preach for us chizuk. You could speak about that topic, me'eis le'eis, for a couple of weeks. It's a huge topic, and every word that he chose wallops a punch. But let's begin by talking about, it is our achrayus as rabbeim, as parents, as teachers, as people, especially pre-Shavuos. You had nothing better to do. Hagam that everyone came in support and recognition of Calabasas Yeshiva. It is Erev Shavuos. There are so many things that you have to do and yet you came out tonight. That to me is a big deal. So what is it? Let's start about transmitting the Mesirah. What we can do, maybe in keeping with Sur Meirav Asei Toiv, we'll first start with one of the biggest impediments. I want to make it clear. Because we have so much to get in less than 30 minutes, there are many things that stand in the way. Here, in my humble opinion, is one of the biggest impediments. Why maybe the Mesirah is not being transmitted to the next generation. I'll introduce it best with a story that happened to me. I was flying for Shabbos to Philadelphia, from Miami to Philly. Erev Shabbos, naturally, I started the trip early enough that it would be a proper time. For this particular flight, I was sitting in seat 1D as in David. In other words, the aisle seat when you walked on the left-hand side. It's true, about a half hour before landing in Philadelphia, the flight attendant, which means that she would be sitting diagonally in front of me in her jump seat, started the announcements. I do travel from time to time. I've been on a plane countless times. So I know the announcement even in a REM-esque sleep. It goes something like this. She took the microphone and started to say, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, the fasten seatbelt sign is illuminated. Please make sure that your seatbelts are flat and tight across your lap. Make sure your tray table is in the closed position. Make sure you're seated in the upright position and your luggage is stowed away as things may have shifted in flight. As we begin our initial descent into... She put it over here and she leaned forward and she said to me, where are we headed? And I said, Philadelphia. She finished the announcement, she shut it off, and she came over to me. I'm not embellishing this, a cuticle. She came over to me and she said to me, I do the trip coming and going so often, and she addressed me as Rabbi, which I guess was a pretty stunning observation. And she said, I don't always know where I'm going. And she left a few rows, and I happen to be a very emotional person by nature. So I laughed, but then I did start crying. Because sometimes it takes a flight attendant 35,000 feet in the air to remind you not to be so busy. One of the biggest impediments to properly transmitting the Messiah to our children, and I'm going to say it clearly, I hope you're willing to listen, is sometimes we become so busy, and I don't mean with things that we should, I'm obviously speaking about with things that we shouldn't. Why do you need me to tell you about a flight attendant? Open up Mesilas Yesharim Perek Beis, Ramchal tells us in great detail on the word Tichbor HaAvoda, that Tichbor HaAvoda meant, we think it means that it was such a backbreaking funereal labor. That's not what it means. The Ramchal says it means that, you look at the Lashon yourself, that he kept us diabolically, brilliantly, but diabolically, so busy and busy and busy and busy and busy, that you don't have time to stop and think, what am I doing here? And if you think about every single gullus we've been in, Sai Bavel and Yavon and in Purim Paras, and now everything, Atzar HaShava Shebehen, is there's always something created, whether it's different forms of technology, whatever it is, that keeps us so busy and busy and busy and busy. They say a little while ago that a teacher asked the first grade girls, what do all of you want to be when you grow up? And I guess the first few gave the common answer that many would give. And apparently one of the little first grade girls answered, I want to be a smartphone. And when questioned by the teacher, what type of answer is that? She answered innocently, because if I was a smartphone, then my parent would have time for me, hold me, appreciate me, etc. I cannot tell you that I verified that story, but I could tell you it's certainly possible that it happened. Don't be so busy. There's zero chance of properly. I don't want you to think that that was said in hyperbole. It wasn't. There's no chance of properly transmitting the Messiah of yesteryear to our children of today if we are so busy and we become unrecognizable to them and we're not there to be able to properly do that. I remember over 20 years ago, I did a Shabbos of Chizuk in Atlanta with Reb Shmuel Dishon. And I remember he said words in his Masei Shabbos keynote that shook me to the core. He was talking about this topic and he had mentioned that he had met a while before, a friend of his from 60 years earlier, they must have grown up together. I'm sorry that I'm going to say something that's painful to say, but that's the way he said it. And when he was talking to his childhood friend, who was extremely affluent and very, very well-to-do with homes all over the place, he must have said a term in real estate. I don't know if it was portfolio, binder, whatever it was. And Reb Shmuel Dishon wasn't familiar with the term, so he asked his childhood friend to explain. And apparently the friend must have said something like, either referring to Reb Shmuel Dishon by his first name, what a foolish thing, what a fool, something like that. Point being, you don't even know a basic term in real estate. You know, this fellow had houses all over the place that would make people blush. and you're in the same place for the last comma of a comma decades, and you don't know a basic real estate term? Not a few minutes came and went, and the conversation shifted to a ben zakunim that the friend had. We'll say his name was Moshe, and now at this time of the story, he was about 9 or 10. So Shmuel Dishon innocently said, "Oh, you're Moshe. So Mestoma, he just started Haskalah's Gemara. What Gemara did he start?" Needless to say, our real estate friend couldn't answer, like he didn't even know if it was a Bubba. So then he starts peppering him with questions. What Chumash is he learning? Who are his two best friends? Does he ever get bullied? How did he do on his last halacha test? You know if he started learning Navi? Question after question. I don't even want to say the friend was breaking his teeth. He was shattering his teeth. He couldn't give a proper answer to any single question. At which point, Reb Shmuel Dishon stood up and his inimitable style said so forcefully, "I'm the fool? You have a ben zakunim, your most precious and priceless thing in the world. You don't know the Gemara, you don't know the Navi, you don't know the Halacha, you don't know the Chumash, you don't know his friends, you don't know if he's being bullied. I'm the fool because I don't know a real estate term?" That story happened over 20 years ago when I heard it. Every time I repeat it, I still feel how shaken I am by the lesson he taught all of us. I do remember I flew home Sunday morning and Sunday evening. By us, supper, we try to make it a very important quality time, bonding, sharing thoughts. You don't during supper answer phone and do kol mine zachen. Terrible idea, terrible message to send. So the kids were obviously much, much younger, 20, 25 years ago. They were sitting across for a moment. My wife went out of the room and I was so shaken by the story from Motzei Shabbos the night before, I quickly turned to my kids and said, "Kids, I have to ask you before mommy walks into the room. Don't ask me why I'm asking, but I want to make sure this is how you did on your Navi test. These are three closest friends and here's what's going on in school." I don't remember how right or wrong I was, but I do know that if a person wants to successfully transmit that Messiah, and you're beginning with an honest evaluation, as I said when I started, there are multiple reasons. Time doesn't allow us to give a potpourri, so I chose one. Don't be so busy. And by the way, this story that I told you about Philly Mamish was said in comma places around the world. A very, very choshev Magid Shir Mechanech, I'm not mentioning his name, told me that when his elderly mother, she's not alive anymore, but when she was alive, she heard the story and she told her son, this Adam Choshev Adlam Oy, the next time you see Rabbi Shapiro, tell him that he's leaving out the most important part of that story with the flight attendant. I was certainly intrigued. What does his chash of a mother mean? He told me his mother said that Rabbi Shapiro has to add that the takeaway of that story is that when you don't know where you're going, ask your Rav. She said, that's the takeaway. There are so many Rabbonim and Mechanchim in the room. Ask them. But don't be so busy. Not for your spouse. Not for a parent, not for your children. Because if we're transmitting the Messiah of yesteryear of our Babis and Zaydis and our parents to our children, hear me clearly. Don't be so busy. What are some of the things that we as parents could do? What are some of the things that could help us navigate properly transmitting the Messiah? I imagine there are countless answers. In the remaining time, and I'm trying my hardest, I've been in LA countless times to speak, always try the amount of time given, we try not to abuse it by even half a minute. So we'll try in the remaining time to briefly talk about hopefully three things of how you could navigate through the difficulty where lemaisa there's a lot going on in the world out there. Tachlis, Rabbi Yisai, it's Erev Shavuos. What can you and I do? I'd like to humbly offer three suggestions. Number one, in Megillas Ruos, perhaps one of the most famous psukim is when Ruos tells Naomi, her mother-in-law, future mother-in-law, Ashatelchi, where you go, I'll go, where you lodge, I'll lodge. What is that? What is she answering? The Gemara in Yevamos famously tells us that when somebody wants to convert, you try to go ahead and dissuade them as much as possible. So this was Naomi trying to dissuade Rus by telling her a couple of things. Number one, there's an Isra of Tchum Shabbos. There's certain places beyond the boundary you can't go. To which Rus answered, where I can go, I will. The next attempt to dissuade was Isra Yichud. You can't seclude yourself with certain people. To which she answered, where I can lodge, I will lodge. It seems innocent enough, I think. One of my favorite pshatim on this pasuk is from a dear friend of mine, Reb Moshe Halevi Bamberger, in his classic Shiras Halevi on Rus. He asks a great kasha. If indeed this pasuk is Rus's answering Naomi, that there's an Isser of Tchum Shabbos and an Isser of Yichud, then the answers that Rus should have been, if you would be in this room and you're Rus, and I tell you there are places you can't go, your answer linguistically should be, where I can't go, I won't. She doesn't say that. She says, where I can, I will. Who asked you anything about where you could go? You're not answering Tzum Zach at all. There's an Isser of Yichud. The answer should that to be should be where I can't lodge, I won't. Instead, she says where I can, I will. Linguistically, I'll be diktuk. The verbiage should be beloshem shlili. To the tchum Shabbos, where I can't, I won't. To the Isra of Yichud, where I can't, I won't. But she doesn't answer that way. I don't understand Lizaveg. How do the answers match the questions? Kalu kal. Yet every year we say the same thing. So he says in pile ployim. You're right, linguistically, al pidiktuk, the verbiage should be lashon shlili. And the more appropriate answer would have been, where I can't, I won't. You know why she didn't answer that? Because she was sending a deeper message to her mother-in-law-to-be. I know the answer is lashon shlili, but I'm going to answer in the positive. Because I want you to know that if I'm zeichet to become the Eimah Malchus, the mother of royalty, the great-grandmother of Melech HaMashiach David Ben Yishai, if I'm zeichet to be part of Am Yisrael, I want you to know I'm not viewing it as a burden. In other words, it's like we would say, Ashreinu Matoiv Manayim Mayofeh. I know that proper Abiduktuk I should answer negatively, Beloshon Shlili. But I'm not, because I want you to know, if I join your people, I'm going to do it with an excitement and a vivaciousness and a positivity. It was when Naomi heard that that was Rus's attitude that she said, now you are for our people. Because you're right, al pi diktuk, it should be lashon shlili. But when she understood that Rus was conveying a positive excitement, a vivaciousness, yes, I can't say it any better than the pasuk. Ashreinu matoiv manoyim mayafa. That doesn't mean I'm telling you there aren't challenges. Yes, that's called life. Difficulties and challenges. But you really want them. By the way, don't think, oh, I'm somebody who flew in from Miami, going back in a little bit, and I'm leaving you with a message. Anybody who's ever heard me speak before knows, I always will try to speak about something that I have to remind myself of and work on. And I feel it's a message that might be worthy to share with others. But first and foremost, I tell it to myself. You have to create, I remember years ago when I was speaking about this topic, while it may not be poetically so beautiful, I remember thinking, create a home where there's simcha bouncing off the walls. You know, it doesn't make a difference what your blood type is, your personality, it's irrelevant. Kol echad according to their level, give it over, the mesorah transmitted. What could I as a parent do for my children and my einikloch? Let them see the beauty, the matoiv, the manoyim, the mayofa. I will not keep giving it over, belashon shlili, belashon shlili. Let them realize this is vivacious. It's possible, yes, with the difficulties and with the challenges, you can. I know that the next story is said over about many. I can tell you kama v'kama times as I've tried to verify the way that I heard it. Approximately, even a little bit more than 100 years ago, there was a little boy who was brilliant. And his brilliance, I assume, caught many of the seculars' attention, and they wanted to, the Enlightenment, grab him to their world. Baruch Hashem, that didn't happen, but it was primarily because of a mice. As a little boy, this child came home. He finished a chelik of Mishnayos. And in passing, he mentioned it on a weekday to his mother. Ma, I finished this chelik of Mishnayos. And she stopped on the drop of a dime and said, "You what?" He finished a chelik of Mishnayos. As you've heard probably with countless people, but this is the way I was able to verify the story, she went ahead, called her husband. They mamish set up the room like it was Besuda Shleima B'Shaita. They put on their big day Shabbos. They set up as it was Yontif. They put him on their shoulder. And they danced and they danced and they danced. Because to them, that was Ashreinu Matoy Manoyim Mayofa. And when he saw that vivaciousness, that positiveness, that Rus-esque answer, he said, "Torah is the only life for me." That boy's name was Yitzchak Huttner. And he went on to become the legendary Rosh Hashiva of Chaim Berlin and one of our Gedolei Yisrael, exactly as I heard the Maisa. Now, let me be theatrical for about 20 seconds. What would have been if when he came home, his mother didn't respond that way, but maybe a more typical response. Do me a favor, don't put your schnitz on the table there. Last time I knocked over the vase and the chocolate, I Windex for an hour and a half. Tonight, when I do a little bit of the bedtime and the Hamalach HaGoyal and that, so you'll tell me with the carpal, you'll tell me then about the Mishnayos thing you just told me then. What? Thank you, Mrs. Huttner, for being Rus-esque in nature. That's the first thing I think that we as parents can do. I didn't say it's easy, but there's so much at stake, it's not negotiable. Create an environment in a ruach of positivity, you can, vivaciousness, excitement. Let the children see transmitting the Messiah is matoiv manoyim mayofa. Number two. I actually mentioned to Rabbi Saltz we were going to touch upon this one. A number of years ago, there was a bocher in yeshiva who unfortunately was doing things, I don't know the specifics of what he was doing, but he was being raised by his mother herself. And the hanhola didn't tell her what the son was up to because there was nothing that she could do. They crossed their T's, dotted their I's, so it was genuine. But he crossed the line, he had to be thrown out of yeshiva. She naturally said to the Anhala, "Why didn't you tell me?" They respectfully answered, "We would have if there was something you could do, but since we assessed and there was nothing you could do, we didn't want as a single mother to cause you unnecessary pain or angst or tsar." And she looked at them and said these words, and I quote, "Nothing I could have done? I could have davened. You stopped me from davening. You don't know what would have been." Let's go to Reb Michal Yehuda and let him adjudicate the case. I was by Reb Michal Yehuda in that apartment in Bnei Brak countless times. It was like being in the Kodshei Kodoshim with the Kohen Gadol, I would imagine. She sat on one side, they sat on another, and they each presented their case. And Reb Michal Yehuda looked at the Anhala and said, "She's right. You cannot stop a parent, specifically a mother, from davening. You don't know what would have been with the tefillahs." And he said the son has to be taken back into yeshiva. That was his psak. The power of a prayer, the power of a mother's tears, lich benchin v'zakeni legado bonim, you can't stop that. Is there anything more powerful? My uncle, we were speaking about him on the ride over here, the Montreal Rosh Hashiva, Reb Motel Weinberg. My uncle, Reb Motel, could certainly give you countless stories on this topic. But perhaps one of the better known stories about my uncle, Reb Motel, when he was Mesader Kedushin out of town. So he asked to stay in a hotel all the time. Perhaps it wasn't understood why. In other words, you'd be very comfortable by an achsanya, someone's home. Why does the Rosh Hashiva insist out of town, I mean in town, he went home after Seder Kedushin for a Talmud. But out of town, why does the Rosh Hashiva insist on a hotel and he confided in a family member, which Baruch Hashem, now we know. When I am Mesader Kiddush in front of my Talmidim after the Chasana, I spend the night saying Sefer Tehillim and daven for their Shalom Bayis. And sometimes it's with Bechiyos and Koilos. And if I stay by an Achsanya, I don't want to disturb them and keep them up. And that's why I choose to stay in a hotel where I wouldn't bother anyone. Now that is what we could do. You want to talk about successfully transmitting the Messiah of yesteryear and what we could do and navigate? You know everything is Siyata Dishmaya. There's nothing without it. I remember I spoke on behalf of an organization. I said over this well-known story that I just told you about my uncle Reb Motel, how he would spend the night davening for the Shalom Bayis of his Talmidim Sefer Tehillim with Koilos and Bechiyos. And they came over to me at this particular gathering and they wanted to introduce me to a Rebbe, and the principal said the Rebbe may be a bit bashful, so the principal told me the Maisa. He told it to me about a seventh grade boy who for the first half of the year, it just didn't seem like his grades were going anywhere. He had no hatzlacha. But the principal would always stay on top of the Talmidim, and he noticed about halfway through the year, all of a sudden the seventh grade boy, every test, Yediyas, Kishreinus, Harvanya, Mele, everything, he was just acing everything. It was mamash mizrach lemayriv. And he had no idea what the pshat was. One night, he told me, I heard this, he told me that he went to the school for something, and he noticed a light under one of the classrooms, and he went to peek in, and he saw the boy's Rebbe sitting in the Talmud, that Talmud's desk, crying, saying Sefer Tehillim. He thought maybe it was punk this night that I found him there, so he told me, admittedly, he made many spot checks over the next weeks and months, whatever it was, and every night that he came, he found that boy's Rebbe sitting in the boy's desk saying Sefer Tehillim. And surely we could give countless stories, but what we could do, like Reb Michal Yehuda said, don't stop a parent from davening. V'zakeini l'gadol bonim. Shavuos is approaching. We have a chance to beseech the Rebbe Shem. We just said a few days ago, Tefillas Hashlo Erev Rosh Chodesh. Now that's something practically we could do. And finally, number three. The famous Haftorah of Manoach, he and his wife weren't blessed with children. And the man of Hashem, the Malach, comes to the wife and tells her she'll have a Nazir, a Nazir, a Lakim. Indeed, it became Shimshain. And she fills her in on all the halachis of a Nazir, etc. And you know the Haftarah as well as I. And famously, Manoach wasn't there. When he came back, his wife filled him in on what the man of Hashem said. Manoach questioned his wife. He has to come back again. He must have questioned something. He comes back, you're the one, I'm the one, and then he turns to Manoach and says, Mikol asher amarti Eloisha tishomer. Whatever I told her to do with the child, she should do. Take a look, as we all have, Mayim Beis HaShoeva from Rav Schwab. And I will say, as I've marked it and said it to the foremost mechanchim in the world, this is the yesoid shebi yesoidais, the ikur shebi karim in parenting and everything. But take a look at Rav Schwab's Lashonai HaKodesh. He asks, Bekitzer, we just have a few minutes left, what's going on over here? Did he not trust his wife? And if he didn't, he could have asked a Rav, you didn't have to schlep the Malach back again. And besides the fact, most notably, the Malach didn't say any chiddush. He didn't explain. He just said, whatever I told your wife to do, she should do. How do you explain the whole story? Famously, Rav Schwab Zatzal tells us, Manoach heard his wife, and he believed his wife. He had a more fundamental question. Manoach knew himself. He wondered, how am I going to have a Nazir? A nazir is at the heart of being a child. How am I going to have a nazir? A nazir is someone who's holy and exalted, and I'm not all that. How is it shayach, hayitochen, I'm going to have and raise successfully a nazir? If Schwab tells us the word tishomer is one of the words in Lashon HaKodesh that is Sai Lashon Nekeva, but also Lashon Zachar. And when he told Manayach Mishkol Asher Amarit Elisha tishomer, he was not saying whatever I told your wife she should do. He was saying, Mishkol Asher Amarit Elisha, whatever I told your wife, tishomer you should do, Lashon Zachar. You got to walk the walk and talk the talk. You got to be the real deal. And Rav Schwab says in sentence after sentence, the number one eight, the best piece of advice, Sayin Chinuch, transmitting the Messiah, and everything is, you have to be the real deal. You have to walk the walk and talk the talk. You can't be Echad Bebe Echad Beleg. You have to go ahead and make sure they sense and they value what's important to you. That's it. I don't think it's rocket science. Mikol Asher Amarti Elisha Tishomer, you, the parent, you gotta be real, you gotta walk the walk. Show them how it goes. Lead by example, and then you could transmit the Messiah. Many years ago, my wife was speaking to a woman who, at that time, this woman was alive, but she told my wife the following story, that she was getting on a Miami Metro bus. In those days, you had to pay for a bus for any child over five. She was getting on the bus with her child who was five in a few months, but she told my wife she didn't feel like paying a second amount, a second fare. So she told her, this is what story she told my wife, she told her child, who was five in a few months, when the driver asks how old you are, tell him you're four. In other words, I'm only paying once. She gets on, she pays once. The driver looks, says to the boy, how old are you? Dutifully, he says, I'm four. He says, when are you going to be five? The boy says, the second I get off this bus. It's exactly how it happened. Mikol Asher Amarat Yalisha Tishomer. The flip side of that happened about a year later. One of my mispalim was in Eretz Yisrael, and he was visiting his cousin, who had two little children, a little boy and a little girl. And you notice when he arrived, they were playing Monopoly with some friends. Monopoly, easy game, couple hours, you lose your money, your property's done. He noticed that his little cousins, boy and girl, were playing the same game of Monopoly, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, a few hours, he knew it was the same game. It never, ever ended. Thursday, he must have felt a little exasperation, so he went over to his little two cousins and said, how are you still playing the same game of Monopoly? Monopoly, you lose your property, you're out of money, the game's over. The little seven-year-old girl says, lose your money? We started a gemach. In our Monopoly, we have a gemach. You don't lose your money. Mikol Asher Amarti Elisha Tishomer. You could have a kid who says, I'm five when I get off the bus, or someone who instinctively and intuitively knows Monopoly is with a gemach. It's our decision. As you have been so kind to gather before Shavuos Haba Aleinu L'Tayva, that we successfully transmit the precious Messiah of yesteryear to our children of today. We commit not to be so busy. We commit to try to create a home of excitement, positivity, opportunities. We definitely daven, and then daven some more. And we will try to be real and sincere and genuine, because Mikol Asher Amarti Elisha Tishomer is up to us. It's either I'll be five when I get off the bus, or they'll instinctively and intuitively know Monopoly is with a gemach. May we be zeicha to incredible siyata d'shmaya meruba to transmit the precious Messiah to our most precious possession, our children. And may we be zeichet to only Yiddish Nachas Gesundheit.